Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up stories from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. I'm your host, Nikki Willette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Today is Friday, September 27th. Today we've got stories on the U.S.-Japan trade deal, incoming winter weather, and what swings in the Mysis shrimp population in Flathead Lake could mean for trout. Montana wheat farmers say they've been given a glimmer of hope with an initial trade deal reached this week between the U.S. and local grain growers' largest buyer, Japan. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
The deal announced by the two countries Wednesday begins to mend pain felt by farmers and ranchers in the ongoing trade war. Expected to take effect by the start of next year, the agreement lowers or removes tariffs on American goods like wheat, beef, pork, corn, and more. This means U.S. producers will be able to sell to Japan on equal footing as other countries in the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership, the multinational free trade agreement that replaced an agreement President Trump pulled out of in 2017.
I think this is going to be an exceptional deal for Montana.
Lyle Benjamin is the president of the Montana Grain Growers Association.
The details that I've seen so far look like the agreement for wheat and barley will be very much like what would have been in the CPTPP protocol if we had still been in that.
He says most wheat farmers broke even or lost money last year. According to the Montana Wheat and Barley Committee, state growers lost around $150 million this year because of trade disputes. President Donald Trump is working to strike new deals around the world over his concern of tens of billions of dollars in trade imbalances. Montana wheat farmers didn't support withdrawing from the original TPP trade deal. Benjamin says the trade partnership with Japan is a start, but wants to see more deals with other countries, the same countries that are in the new TPP.
It got all those agreements in place in with one signature. Now we need to go look for 11 or 12 signatures to achieve the same thing.
The Montana Stock Growers Association, Montana Farm Bureau, and all three members of Montana's congressional delegation are also calling the trade agreement a win for the state's agriculture jobs. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Yellowstone National Park has named its first female chief ranger. The Billings Gazette reports Sarah Davis of Lexington, North Carolina, will become the park's 18th chief ranger. She starts in December. Davis has worked for the National Park Service for two decades. Since 2012, she's been chief ranger at Natchez Trace Parkway, a 400-mile drive through Alabama, Mississippi, and Tennessee. The regional head of the organization that sets interest rates and national financial policy was in Billings this week to talk about the economy. Kayla DeRoche with Yellowstone Public Radio News reports.
On Thursday, Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis President Neel Kashkari talked to roughly 200 people about the trade war between the United States and China, the state of the stock market, and interest rates. He said the Federal Open Market Committee lowered interest rates earlier in the summer and then again last week. He's a proponent of this trend and, in fact, advocated for even steeper cuts. Kashkari said he didn't see any reason for higher interest rates to hold the economy back. He said wages are picking up and workers are doing better. What isn't doing better is business investment.
We hear anecdotally that businesses are nervous about the outlook, so they're not investing quite as much.
He said the trade war has put pressure on businesses that export abroad and disrupted agriculture. He said farmers are anxious, and some smaller operations are selling out. Meanwhile, larger communities with diverse economies like Billings are more resilient. University of Montana economist Bryce Ward agrees with that take.
If you're Billings, or if you're Missoula, if you're Bozeman, and you have a firm or an industry that takes a hit, it's not great, but it's not going to kind of tank your economy. The smaller communities in the state, however, they're a little bit more exposed.
He gives Colstrip and its coal industry as an example. Ward says the state has seen stable employment over the last year, and he agrees a low interest rate is a good idea, although whether the U.S. needs to go lower is hard to say. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is offering a reward of up to $1,000 for information about a white-tailed deer that was killed and left to waste on the south edge of Billings. FWP game warden Connor Langle says the remains of the buck were found under an apple tree at South 27th Street and Garden Avenue yesterday. The deer had been shot with an arrow. Its head, parts of its hindquarters, and back straps had been removed, but the rest of the animal was left to waste. Anyone with information can call anonymously to FWP's 24-hour crime reporting line at 1-800-TIP-MONT. The seasons are changing in Montana, and so are the hours at some of the ports of entry with Canada. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kay Erickson has the details.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection plans to close the Chief Mountain Port of Entry in the northeast corner of Glacier National Park for the winter on Monday at 6 p.m. Chief Mountain is on Montana Highway 17, which closes for the winter at the Glacier border. CBP announced that the Wild Horse Port northwest of Havre will go to winter hours of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. starting October 1st. The ports of Delpanita, northeast of Browning, and Turner went to winter hours on September 15th. The ports of Scobie, Morgan, and Opime in northeast Montana will continue to operate from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. through the winter. Montana has three ports of entry with Canada that operate at 24 hours, at Roosevelt north of Eureka, Sweetgrass north of Shelby, and Raymond north of Plentywood. At one time, CBP had designated Raymond to have its hours reduced, but dropped that idea in May, at least temporarily, after pressure from Montana's congressional delegation. Lynn Hurst with CBP Public Affairs said Raymond remains a 24-hour port, but is still being evaluated, as are all ports of entry between Montana and Canada. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Kay Erickson.
Unseasonably cold and wet weather is set to pummel Montana this weekend. As Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports, the cold snap's widespread impacts could possibly affect power lines, livestock, and backcountry travelers.
The next several days will make it feel like we bypassed autumn altogether and went straight to winter. Missoula National Weather Service meteorologist Jen Kitzmiller sums up the inbound winter-like weather event with one word: abnormal.
Here in Missoula, it's been 30 plus years since we've seen measurable snow in September.
That could change this weekend. In fact, the entire state will bear the brunt of this cold front. Kitzmiller says the system will unfold in three distinct phases. The first lays down its cards Friday evening into Saturday morning.
And this is going to be the period when we are expecting to begin to see some high elevation, heavy, wet snow. Particularly along the Continental Divide, Moriah's Pass in particular.
Forecasters say up to a foot of snow could accumulate there. The valleys, meanwhile, will see rain during this same Friday-Saturday window. Wind, too, especially in northwest Montana, where north-northeast gusts could reach 50 miles an hour. Again, meteorologist Jen Kitzmiller.
So with that, we have quite a bit of concern with those winds to see some tree and power line damage. We're also concerned about dock and boat damage on Flathead Lake.
The storm system's second phase grabs hold Saturday night into Sunday morning. That's when the valley rainfall could change over to wet, heavy snow. Several inches are possible, but ground temperatures are still fairly warm, which could prevent much accumulation on roads.
But one thing that we'll be really concerned about in this time frame is that heavy, wet snow on trees, potentially bringing down tree branches and causing some issues with power.
The third and final phase of this early season winter storm on Monday and Tuesday will be punctuated with overnight lows in the 20s, perhaps even the teens. That hard freeze could damage irrigation systems, be tough on livestock, and create slippery, dangerous driving conditions. The wintry forecast has prompted Glacier National Park to announce some temporary closures. Reporter Aaron Bolton has more on that.
The Many Glacier Campground closed Thursday, and the Two Medicine Campground will close Friday. Deputy Superintendent Pete Webster says most of Going to the Sun Road also shut down in anticipation of this weekend's storm.
Currently, the Going to the Sun Road is closed between Jackson Glacier Overlook and on the east side, an Avalanche Campground on the west side.
Webster says all roads on the east side of the park are expected to close Friday as snow begins to fall. He adds that the park is working to get seasonal employees out before then.
We're going to have less employees out there to help folks if they get into trouble. So we certainly, like everybody else, are encouraging folks to not enter the area during the course of the storm.
The closures on the east side of the park are expected to last at least through Tuesday. Road preservation work on the western portion of Going to the Sun Road will prevent plows from working between Avalanche Campground and Logan Pass. The section of road was expected to reopen Sunday, but Webster says that date will now depend on if and when the snow melts. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana wildlife officials have been unable to locate a grizzly bear that mauled an Ohio hunter in southwestern Montana. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks wardens began investigating Tuesday, shortly after the attack was reported in the Gravelly Mountains. FWP spokesman Morgan Jacobson said yesterday that the hunter reported he was walking through blown-down timber when he was attacked by a bear at close range. The hunter said he fired several shots at the bear until it left. Investigators did find evidence the bear was injured. The Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest has posted signs warning visitors of bear activity. Tuesday's mauling happened about 8 miles south of where three hunters were injured in two separate attacks on September 16th. The bear or bears involved in those attacks was not found. The Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes are in the midst of their Mac Days fishing contest on Flathead Lake, along with their parallel gill netting efforts aimed at reducing invasive lake trout numbers. Both are showing signs of working, but as Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports, this comes as one of the species' main food supplies is going through some major changes.
On a sunny day this summer, tribal fisheries biologist Barry Hansen was on his way to collect the catch from one of the tribe's gill netters fishing along a deep section of Flathead Lake. As he arrives, the crew is pulling in the nearly 3-mile-long net filled with about 400 lake trout of all sizes. The operation is part of the tribe's lake trout suppression program, which aims to reduce lake trout numbers in an effort to restore native trout species.
On the peak season, we run two boats, and where we're fishing right now is what we call the trench. It's 300 to 350 feet deep. It's heavy with mysis, so the lake trout really concentrate there now.
Mysis shrimp made their way into Flathead Lake in the 1980s from a nearby water system where they were introduced to boost a salmon fishery. The mysis population exploded, and so did the number of lake trout feeding on them. Over time, mysis became a linchpin in Flathead's ecosystem, affecting everything from the top to the bottom of the food chain. However, mysis populations are changing. Overall abundance of the small crustacean is low compared to historical highs.
Over the last 5 years, on average, it's been about like 60 individuals per square meter. We've had as high as like 110.
Flathead Lake Biological Research Station ecologist Sean Devlin says mysis populations have actually been quite erratic over the last decade, with 50% population swings every few years. Recent research also indicates that mysis in Flathead Lake are breeding at different times of the year.
Mysis are breeding more. They usually had a single cohort in a year, and we're seeing double, and in some years we've seen a third cohort appear.
How well that second or third cohort survives is likely the direct cause of population changes year to year, but it's hard to say what's driving the overall change in reproductive strategy. Devlin says it could signal things are really good for mysis, or that it's a last-ditch effort to keep the population going. Mysis have been known to crash out of lake systems with high abundances, but Devlin says it's too early to predict whether recent population swings are a signpost for a similar event in Flathead Lake.
I think we're just going to continue to see this oscillation as this dynamic occurs. I think that the status quo of up, up, down, 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 up kind of thing is where we're going to continue to see.
Back on the gill netter, Hansen with the Salish and Kootenai tribes says that trend hasn't had a huge impact on lake trout, at least so far. Annual catch assessment numbers are trending downward, indicating an overall population decline. But he says that's due to the tribe's suppression efforts. They're aiming to reduce adult lake trout by 75%. The tribes estimated there were nearly 1.5 million lake trout in Flathead Lake back in 2014 when they began gill netting. Between that and the Mac Days contest, the tribes are currently harvesting about 110,000 lake trout annually. But the plan is to increase that number.
The near-term goal is to catch more every year toward the long-term goal, which is in total 143,000 lake trout. And that's by all methods, by the fishing contests, by gill netting, and by public as well. A little safer on the pallet.
On shore, Hansen and his crew are unloading the day's catch at a processing facility. He says if Mises populations are indeed headed for a decline, that may help.
If they do go down over time, that would make it harder for lake trout and maybe make our jobs a little easier, but I don't think it really converts that way.
It's unclear exactly what the large changes in Mises populations will mean in the long term for lake trout and the greater food web. But without immediate ripples in the ecosystem, one thing is clear. Flathead Lake is showing its resilience to change. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates about the news of the day. I'm Nikki Ouellette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Thanks for listening.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.